In our world today, celebrities and leadership are often synonymous terms, but they are clearly not. A celebrity makes noise and people pay attention. That doesn't mean that they're following. The definition of a leader is you turn around and there's somebody behind you. You can make all the noise you want. You can claim to be a leader. You could be, you know, throwing your hands in the air and screaming and hollering, saying, "Everybody follow me." But if you turn around and there's nobody there, by definition, you're not a leader. The Bible has a lot to say about following certain kinds of examples, and we get one in 3 John. So let's dive into 3 John just to remind you a little bit. In verse number 9, the writer, John, the elder, he's writing to this church, or to his buddy Gaius in this church, and he says, "I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, will not welcome us." We talked about him before. Diotrephes was a man who loved the, what I would say in my vocabulary, the limelight. And I was saying that to myself this morning, and I went, "What is limelight? Does anybody know?" I had to look it up. On a stage, when they make a production, some of the lighting is called limelight. It's a certain kind of lighting. You know, it gives a preeminence to the one in the center kind of thing. They get the best light, I guess, is the way to say it. Well, Diotrephes was like that. We spent a lot of time, the last time I taught, talking about people who want the attention. Remember, we went into, I think it was Matthew, we were talking about the Pharisees, and they wouldn't go to the market except on, or wouldn't go outside except on market day, because everybody would be there. And they wore the long tassels, you know, and a certain kind of coat, just to make sure. And if they were fasting, they made sure they had a long face, so you'd go, "Oh, I can see you haven't eaten. You're so spiritually minded." And all that, all for attention. So he says, okay, I wrote to Diotrephes, you know, he loves to be first, he won't welcome us. So in verse 10, "So when I come, I will call attention to what he's doing. He's spreading malicious nonsense about us. Not satisfied with that, he even refuses to welcome other believers. He also stops those who want to do so, and he puts them out of the church. Dear friend, do not imitate or follow what is evil, but what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. Demetrius is well spoken of by everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him, and you know that our testimony is true. I have much to write to you, but I do not want to do so with pen and ink. I hope to see you soon. We will talk face to face. Peace to you. The friends here send their greetings. Greet the friends there by name." So turning from the kind of the critical look he gave at Diotrephes, he now turns to another guy, the testimony of a man named Demetrius. There are two people in our Bible that are named that. One is a silversmith in the book of Acts who incites a big riot in the town of Ephesus. This is not him. This guy is introduced with no introduction, no explanation, no extraneous information. And what that tells us is that this man, Gaius, and the church where he was at, knew Demetrius well. You know, there was no explanation necessary. Everybody knew Demetrius. Now, he starts off talking about this power of an example. And I want to stop a second and talk about some other examples in the Bible, and then we'll get back to Diotrephes, to Demetrius in a moment. But the power of an example. The ultimate example for all of us is Jesus Christ. And I put down two verses there. In John 13, verse 15, he says, "For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you." Jesus says, "I have shown you what to do, now do it." Why is the role of the mother so important in the family? And people will answer that, well, she's the glue that holds it together. She's the nurturer. She's the, you know, there's a thousand other words. But from my perspective, from a biblical perspective, the idea of the mom and why she's so important in the family setting is because she's the ultimate example. She's the there every minute. How do you do life? Watch mom. See, in a typical kind of setting, a kid is going to spend more time with a mom than a dad. Not always. There are exceptions, and I understand that. In seasons of life, maybe mom's out working and dad's there. I'm not arguing about any of that. I'm not talking about the roles. But I'm saying in a tick-tock time kind of way, a kid's going to spend more time following after a mom than they typically do following after a dad. So what are they learning? They're learning by example how to live life. How do you do life? Do you do it honest? Do you do it dishonest? when the guy doesn't charge you the right thing at the store, do you go ahead and take the hot deal and say when you get in the car, man, he didn't charge us. Hey, we made 10 bucks there. Kid learned, hey, it's fun to be dishonest. Or you stopped and said, I'm sorry, sir, you're charging us the wrong thing. This thing is worth X bucks. I need to pay you. What does the kid learn? The kid learns by example. You know, the whole idea of getting up early and serving others and being, you know, efficient and effective and persevering, working hard, even when you're tired. Who's the one who works when they got a nasty cold? Dad goes and lays down on the couch or goes to bed. What does mama do? She takes a little NyQuil or something and keeps going. She just keeps going. There is no day off. I love that commercial where the dad opens the door and says, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take tomorrow off. And the kid's standing there in the playpen, you know. There is no day off. I mean, you got to be dead. So the kid learns by example. That's a good day off if you're dead. A little rough this week, huh? My point is that an example is a powerful tool. And so Jesus says, hey, I want to make sure you know, just do as I've done. 1 Peter 2, he says, for this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his footsteps. When you're reading in your Bible and you're choosing where to read in the 66 books, I would encourage you to read and reread the Gospels. Now, I wasn't always that way. In my Bible devotional reading casual time, I have come to appreciate the Gospels a whole lot more the older I've gotten. And it's because of the example. You know, I have a tendency to analyze everything, even when I'm just lightly reading the Bible. And I'm training myself to not do that, to just take the first glance, to think about it, just to let it be an import to me, let it be an example. How did Jesus handle that? Was he wigged out or he wasn't wigged out? Was he patient? He wasn't patient. What made him mad? What made him happy? Did he enjoy being with people? Didn't enjoy being with people? You know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The point being, the ultimate example is Christ. And in all of our lives, that has to be the first example. And then Paul says in several different places, hey, I'd like you to follow me. He's the leader, and he says, follow me. But notice the focus in 1 Corinthians 11. He says, be imitators of me as I am, implied, imitator of Christ. Go ahead and follow me because I'm following him. It's a dangerous thing to say to another human being, come on, follow me. Walk in my footsteps. I wouldn't tell you that. I know my own character, my own faults, my own imperfections, my whatever you, plain old ordinary sins. And I wouldn't say to another human being, go ahead, follow me. Now, I would in a work world kind of way, but in a spiritual way, I would be very uncomfortable with that. But I wouldn't mind saying to you, Colleen, come on and follow me as I'm following Christ. Because the emphasis is on him, not on me. I'm just a link in the chain. And you would turn around to someone behind you and say, come on, follow me. I'm following him. That's what Paul says. In Ephesians 5, he says, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children. The focus is on Christ and his leadership. Another group that has some spiritual authority over us, and we forget this a lot in our culture, is those that are our spiritual leaders. Hebrews 13, it says, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they are keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. Obey and submit to your spiritual leaders. Okay, we can apply this in two different ways. We can apply this to the spiritual side, which is where I'm going today, and I'm thinking now of those that are in pastoral responsibilities. Instead of getting in the car on Sunday morning on the way home from church and having what I call Pastor Stew, I didn't really like that. Did you like the way you did that? I thought it was a little long. Did you get his illustration? And he seemed a little off today. I don't know. Another guy, I like him better. Pastor Stu, right? As opposed to, okay, he's in spiritual leadership over me. He's not infallible. He's not perfect. He's not without his flaws. But I'm going to pray for him. I'm going to submit. I'm going to do it. I'm going to bat. And I'm not having Pastor Stu on the way home from church. Now, this whole thing about spiritual leadership, I felt like I needed to give you a quick word of caution. And that is, while we should respect and honor and certainly follow the good examples of those that are godly around us, we have to be very careful to not elevate them inappropriately. Because godly, a little phrase I put here, godly leaders do not perform well on pedestals. They just don't. It's because their feet are made of clay. Because they have the same tendencies you have. They have the same fears. They have the same frustrations. They have the same angst in their soul, the self-esteem issues, the psychological things, the family dynamics, the relationship kinds of issues. You think you had it fun with Aunt Susie over Thanksgiving. Your pastor does the same thing. He's got an Aunt Susie, and he's got a wayward kid, and he's got a wife that nags him, and he, and. So while it's important that we certainly respect and follow the godly example, we have to be careful to not put these people on too high of a pedestal. And that's why praying for them is the right way to go. You know, as you follow in general, you pray for them. Now, the last kind of general comment I want to make about spiritual leadership is be careful of the bad example. Now, you say this to your kids, all of you that have had or are going to have, are moving into the teenage years, you're going to do the, you know, the bad company, you know, ruins good morals lecture to your kids. That's not a good friend for you. Okay, I get it. But it's not just for kids. See, I put the verse 1 Corinthians 15:33 up there. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. One of my things about Facebook, I'm into this analyzing Facebook now. I really am. I'm thinking about writing a book. No, I'm just being funny. But I am analytical about Facebook. I found some redeeming features. I'm moving from the dark side to the, maybe it has a pink light somewhere. But one of the things that I kind of humorously observe is how many pictures there are of women when they go out with their friends. What does the picture look like? You and your three buddies go out for dinner. What is the picture that's going to show up in Facebook? Come on, somebody. You're all nodding your heads. We all got something with an umbrella in it. Umbrellas unite. Now, I'm not making a commentary about umbrellas. I'm making a commentary, is that the only kind of friendships that we have? That when we go out, we have to have the umbrella. Now, maybe we don't, maybe 10 minutes before or the day before or the week before they went out and there was no umbrellas. But it just is amusing to me how many pictures there are of women with the umbrella. I've gone out to lunch or dinner with many of you in this room, and I'm trying to think, was there ever an umbrella involved? I believe that's a no. We managed to have lunch or dinner. We managed to have coffee. We managed to sit around a table and enjoy each other. So it's not just kids. And I'm not saying because somebody had a cocktail that they're a bad person. But as adults, it is really important. And I gave three or four things here. I want to drive these home. One is to avoid the push of a crowd. Go to Exodus for a second. Exodus 23. This is an amazing passage. You say, well, I'm not affected by the crowd. Really? Really? Clothing, hairstyle, focus on activities. You don't think we're impacted by our gang? I really think we are. Exodus 23, verse 2. Do not follow the crowd in doing wrong. When you give testimony in a lawsuit, do not pervert justice by siding with the crowd. And do not show favoritism to a poor person in a lawsuit. Now, obviously, the context here is a lawsuit. But the point is don't follow the crowd in doing wrong. Do you and your husband set a course for your family and your kids no matter what the rest of the family around you is doing? Did your family set standards for how you celebrated Thanksgiving in your home regardless? That's not to say you don't bring in folks that don't think or feel the same way you do, but was there a standard in your home? I'm not going to talk about your lifestyle out there. However, in here, here's how we do it. We're not going to be affected by the push of the crowd. If you made a choice at Halloween for your children to not dress up and participating, just an example, could you hold to that? Or was the wave so strong that you capitulated? Well, everybody else is doing it. Again, I'm not taking a position on that. Or a thousand other things. You know, is there a day of rest in your home? Or is the push of the sports of our world, our culture, so strong there is no way a family ever has 3 hours to themselves? Can you carve it out? And sometimes you have to be very creative. I've told you about a family that I greatly respect. The gentleman owns a company that cleans buildings for, you know, cleaning company. And because his is all afternoon and evening and night work, he could never have dinner with his family. And he was convicted about not spending that quality time around the table with his family. So he said, that's it. We're all going to bed at 8 o'clock and we're getting up at 5. And from 5 to 7 is family time. And they just reoriented their family. And so when his kids were going through their teenage years, they didn't have dinner with daddy, but they had 2 hours in the morning. They had the Bible, they had laughs, they had giggles, they played board games, they had breakfast. Everybody went on their way. It's not easy, but we have to avoid the push of the crowd as adults, just like our kids do. Avoid partnerships, business and personal, with unbelievers. 2 Corinthians, you probably know this passage, but turn there anyway. 2 Corinthians 6. Be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. Does that make a ring a bell? 2 Corinthians 6:14. Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? You're starting up a business. Your best friend is not a believer. You're convicted that 10% of your proceeds should be tithed and given to the Lord's work. You're excited about doing that. Your partner is not. Now what do? You're unequally yoked. Your family and another family go in together and buy a boat. The other family's idea is umbrellas and more umbrellas and more umbrellas. Your idea is jet skiing and other things that you drag off the back of boats. With or without umbrellas. Unequally yoked. Certainly in marriage. A believer and an unbeliever, the heartache. Many of you sitting in this room have experienced that, where you and your partner are not on the same page spiritually. This is for adults too. The bad example or bad company ruining good morals. I put down, avoid the well-worn path of the wicked. It is always easier to do what everybody else is doing. Always. If all your girlfriends are doing 12 classes of Pilates a week and 6 something else's and I don't know what all that is, then it just seems like, well, yeah, isn't everybody? I'm not making fun of Pilates, a little bit, but only because I couldn't do them. Get my point? The well-worn path, everybody's doing it. We make it such an issue for teenagers, but it's equally an issue for us as adults. Life choices, entertainment choices. You know, if I snuck out to your cars and turned your engines on and the radio came on, you know, what are you listening to? If you went and I saw your Netflix list, what are you watching on Netflix? You know, that well-worn path, that, oh, well, isn't everybody? Oh, that new movie that's out, it's really, maybe not, might not be so good. I walked out of a movie not too long ago. I haven't done that in years. It's a lot of money. It wasn't what I thought, and I got in it, and it was like a bloodbath all over me, language and things, and I just turned to my friend Barb and said, if you want to stay, no problem, but I'm going to go ahead and go. She goes, no, I'm out of here. And we left. You know, well-worn path. Sometimes we have to clamor out. Be careful who you hang out with. And I wrote down, misery loves company, of course. Remember in Numbers when they were moving into the promised land and the Lord said, you know, you got to drive out all the inhabitants of the land. He says in Numbers 33 there, but if you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain, they're going to be barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land where you dwell. If you don't take positions against that which is evil, against the well-worn path, then it's going to bite you.
It is.
When you're trying to decide as a family, do we do this or this? Are we going to go participate in this activity or that activity? Or are we going to do our home this way or our home that way? What are our standards about everything? Everything. Entertainment and food and drinks and family activities and who we hang with and all the rest. When you make those choices, if you don't make them clear and hold to them, they're gonna rise up and bite you in the butt. I just said butt on the tape. Yes, bite you in the butt. They will. It may be difficult up front to take a position. And I'm not talking about, you know, going out in the middle of the street in your neighborhood and announcing with a placard, I'm a Christian and you all are going to hell. I'm not talking about being ludicrous. But there is a bad example, and it's not just affecting our kids. Okay, so to Demetrius, the man that God was going to honor, the man who John clearly thought was a guy worth noting, setting up as an example, saying good things about. He is well spoken of by everyone, and even by the truth itself. We also speak well of him. I'm looking at verse 12. And you know that our testimony is true. Everyone speaks well of Demetrius. That is a cool person when you can say everybody speaks well of him. I haven't known very many of those kind of people in my life. Everybody appreciates that woman's testimony. Not perfect, walk on water, but everybody has something good to say. There's been such an investment in other people. There have been wise choices. They're doing the very best they can with their kids. You know, they're spoken well of. You remember the story of Daniel in Daniel 6? They want to accuse him and throw him out. And in Daniel 6, verse 5, it says, you know what? If we're going to try to figure out anything to accuse him of, it's going to have to be in the realm of spirituality. Because the way he's living his life, there's nothing else we're going to find. Wow. Spoken of well by everyone. And then he's talking about Demetrius in here, and he says, you know, even the truth is reflecting. He says, even by the truth itself, he's known, he's well spoken of by truth. The idea that he was living out what he said. I'm a Christian. Christ is at the center of my life. I try to keep him on the throne. And if you walk around and follow me for a while, you'll see that's my intent. I'm doing truth. It's one thing to say I'm a Christian. It's another to do it, to live it, to act like it, to make decisions, sometimes hard. You know, Demetrius is that kind of a guy. He was just doing the deed. And then John says, you know, boy, I recommend him. You know, my testimony, wow, this is a cool guy. You know, this whole business about being a spiritual leader, it kind of boils down to not the leader of an organization or the leader of a Bible study or the leader of a church or, you know, somebody on the radio or TV. It comes down to just personally having a good name. And not you know, your given name, not Cherry, but a name that speaks of who you are and what you stand for, how you're trying to live your life and guide your family and moving towards spiritual values. The importance of having a good name. Proverbs 22 verse 1 says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. A good name. Ecclesiastes says, a good name is better than precious ointment and the day of death and the day of the birth. Somebody with a good name, when they're gone, it's like, wow, they lived such a cool life. Wow, I respected them. Maybe no limelight. Maybe a fairly small circle of influence, their own families, friendships, maybe where they worked. Not necessarily talking about somebody, you know, known, but at their funeral, what's said about them? Wow, good name. I thought about that whole idea of the good name, and I have a couple of comments, you know, on this business of following an example. When you have a good name, it kind of qualifies you for being in spiritual ministry. And again, I'm not talking about you get paid for it, you're on the church staff. I'm just talking about when you have a good name, people accept spiritual ministry from you. They look for it. Most of you probably worked outside of the home at one time or another. When something bad happened to somebody you worked with, their loved one died, who did they go to in the office? Probably the Christian with the good name. Because they assumed that there would be something there to draw from. Some encouragement, some strength, some direction, some words of care and concern. Same way in your family. You know, I'm thinking family dynamics because it was just the holidays. You know, nobody's getting along with nobody. But something happens in the family. Who did they go to? The one with the good name. In Acts chapter 6, they were trying to decide who was going to be deacons in the early church, because the apostles, who were the preachers, the pastors, the leaders, they were so overworked because the church was exploding. Some of the ministries of the church were not happening. Widows and orphans were not being cared for. And so the church got together and said, hey, we need another level of worker bees here. And they came up with something you and I have come to know as deacons, diaconess in our Bible, just meaning a servant. What qualified them to be a servant? What qualified them is, in Acts 6, it talks about there were seven men of honest report. They had a good name. Not perfect, but they had a good name. When you have a good name, you're qualified in a way to have some service, to be useful. Whether it's in a neighborhood activity, whether it's in a small group at your church, whether it's in a Bible study somewhere, whether it's friends that you gather around in a school setting. But who's qualified? Who gets tapped on the shoulder? Hey, we'd like you to do some leading here. It's the one with the good name. The one that's the pain in the El Rumpo, I ain't calling him. The one that stands in the parking lot, you really think we're going to go tap them on the shoulder to lead the prayer ministry? It's not happening. It's the one with the good name. It's incredibly important to have a good name. Now, quickly, let's make sure you understand. It doesn't mean perfection. A good name could be gained by doing something wrong and treating it right. You can get an amazing good name by falling flat on your face, but getting up, dusting yourself off, go to the person that you were schnooky to. I'm very sorry that I was such a runt. Will you please forgive me? Your children, you rise in high esteem when you apologize to them. Because that kid says to themselves, wow, my mom is real. She was really out of control a minute ago. But look at her. She's humbled herself and she's feeling sorry and she's acknowledging she ain't perfect. And whoa, that's my mom. A good name. Same way in a marriage. He's been a runt all week. You matched it.
If he would just, whatever.
You caught yourself, regardless of what God's doing in his life. You went and apologized and changed your tone and changed your attitude. And suddenly he starts looking at you a little differently. It's a good name. You kind of following me? It's not perfection. The other thing about a good name is that a good spiritual reputation opens doors for ministry. People want those kind of people in their life. They gravitate to them. In the verse I gave had to do with the church in Rome. And in Romans chapter 1, verse number 8, when Paul's writing to the church, he said, your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. Who's he writing to? The people who are being murdered in Rome. And he's acknowledging that their faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. It opens doors for ministry. And let me give you a very today illustration. I mean, a year ago, I was in Afghanistan at a school that I have an association with. I'm on their board. And it's a school that is staffed by Christians, but is not an overt Christian school like Stony Brook. A lot of ethics classes and morals, and certainly the example of the staff themselves. And they serve both the expatriates in the community who are there doing other kinds of work and ministry.
Attention Stony Brook, attention Pause. Stony Brook. We will be on rainy day schedule for recess. Rainy day schedule for recess from 10 o'clock to 10:15. It's TK, KB, and first grade. The TAs will be around to your classroom. 10:15 to 10:30 is second and third. 10:30 to 10:45 is fourth, fifth, and sixth. Thank you.
Boy, are we organized, man. Anyway. The school serves those who are there doing other kind of ministries, and their kids have got to have a place to go to school. And they also serve the Afghanis who want their children to go on to foreign university. They have to learn an American education system spoken in English, and so they serve a lot of those. Well, 4 days ago, while standing on a balcony of their home, the leader of that school watched a family that had been a part of the school, the husband and his two teenage children, murdered. It was the one that was on the news the other night about the guy with the vest, and he approached and blew himself up, and then they threw some hand grenades in, and then came some guys with rifles, and they took over this guest house. And the family there was, I believe, from South Africa, doing some work in the Afghan church. The father was killed, the teenage boy was killed, and the daughter was killed. My friend who runs that school, that's the director, his daughter and the daughter killed were best friends. And they watched it from their balcony. Now they've locked down that school. And today was the first day they allowed the kids to come back. They're choosing to stay there and serve. And the mother, when she found out that her family had been killed, first words out of her mouth was, I'm jealous. I'm jealous. Now guys, what kind of a testimony, what kind of a name, and what kind of open doors are those people going to have for ministry? The way that woman is living her life, the very fact, as I just said to you guys, she said the first words out of her mouth was, I'm jealous, that impacts you at a level. You know, her faith is being spoken of throughout the whole world, and she's just a mama. She's not running the church. She's not running an organization. She's a mama who lost her daughter and her son and her husband in a vile and horrible way. And yet, her good name, we don't even know her name. Her name is Anna Lee, by the way. We're speaking of her in Southern California 4 days later because of her good name. It does open doors for ministry. Ultimately, a good report, a good name, is a reflection of a life that's lived by faith. Those people go to Afghanistan and serve the Lord every single day by faith. You and I don't have that pressure. Surely we could live and have a good name. Our name, synonymous with His name. Not perfect. But doing the best we can. Doing the best as a wife. Doing the best as a mother. Doing the best as an employee or an employer. Doing the best as a next door neighbor. My friend Barb, she's going to win this lady to Christ, my next door neighbor. And you know why? Because as a nurse, she knows how to give shots. And my next door neighbor's cat is dying and needs to be, what is it when you give them water? Not aerated. Hydrated, thank you. The cat needs to be hydrated every 3 days. So my friend Barb goes next door, she hates cats, with the syringe rustles the cat to the ground, pinches in the right place, does it, it takes 30 minutes to get the stuff in there. And why is she doing that? She is buying the right. She's developing a name, a good report. That couple thinks she walks on water. When she sits down with her Bible and to talk about spiritual things, and they're already starting to have those conversations, it's because of her good name giving a stinking shot to a cat. You know, my challenge to you today is that you and I need to work on our name till our name is synonymous with His name. And there is a song, and you're going to hit it on YouTube. You can kind of listen and watch it. If you know this song, it's called Turn My Heart. Lynn DeSasso is the writer. It's okay. Can you hit the lights? Each of us would want to have a good report said about us. And Lord, the words of that song, I've sung it many, many times. Till my name brings honor to the Lamb. Till the choices I make and the example I choose to give and the preferences I have for life and the attitudes I exhibit, until those are lined up behind you, so that in a very meaningful way, my name reflects you. I pray that that would be the cry of all of our hearts today. Help us to be that, Lord. We want our name to bring honor to the Lamb. We I pray it in Christ's name. Amen.
Well, it would have been no fun without you today. I love that song. Donna Hardwick taught me that song years ago. We used to sing it up in the mountains. Well, we got some good discussion questions for you. I hope you'll read them. While, just for a second, let's make sure we have all on our calendar. We are partying hardy on the, which day? Somebody have it memorized? It is on the 16th. So on the 16th, we're going to Lindsay's house, right?
Yoo-hoo!
Yoo-hoo! All right. So you're all getting an email that you can respond to. Yep, I'm coming. It'll have directions and all that kind of stuff. It's a potlucker, so bring anything. But if you get up that morning, the kids were sick, the dog is whatever, the car wouldn't start, don't say to yourself, well, I can't make anything, so I'm not coming. Who cares? The food is the incidental part. Come anyway and enjoy some time. So the directions will be on there. You can invite a friend. We'll just stuff our house full of smiling, happy people. So that's on the 16th. We have one more week together before holidays. Next week we're into Jude. And if there is a book in the Bible that nobody knows anything about, it's the book of Jude. So I cannot wait to teach it to you. So we'll be together next week for Jude. Thanks for coming. It would have been no fun without you.